Hey guys, welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell. We have to get straight into it. Had a massive trade in the NFL like 90 seconds before we were ready to go on air today. Very excited to talk about the NFL draft later on in this show with this guest, but have to get his thoughts as a Jaguars fan with Stephon Diggs coming to the AFC South. It is the excellent JP Acosta from SB Nation. JP, how are you?
I was having a great day. Woke up perfectly fine. New apartment stuff. We're moving in.
Nice. Congratulations. And then
the Texans traded for Stephon Diggs on top of Titans taking Calvin Ridley and the Colts going to get better. It feels like ever since the playoff run for the Jaguars last year, where we were like, oh, this is going to be the Jaguars division, they have constantly taken steps backwards while everybody else has taken steps ahead of them. So this just feels like another one of those, like, oh, yeah, this is what you're supposed to do on a rookie contract and with a quarterback on a rookie contract instead of paying for Zay Jones and paying for Christian Kirk, which has been fine, like, in the micro, on the grand scale, like, you could have had Stephon Diggs.
You don't think Ronald Darby's got Stephon Diggs locked down?
Oh, Buster Brown is going to be ready. Buster Brown.
Buster Brown's watching his Stephon Diggs tape.
Darnell Savage playing in the nickel. Come on now. This is the bulky year.
Okay. I won't torment you about the Jags anymore. I'm sorry. I just had to do it to you. Let's talk about this deal. We'll get to some draft stuff. We have, a cool draft idea to hit later on in the show. But let's talk about this trade. Stephon Diggs goes to the Houston Texans. The Bills get a 2025 second round pick. The Texans get Diggs and two day three selections, a 2024 sixth and a 2025 fifth round pick. So let's start this from the Texan side of things, because obviously they're not all in, maybe is the wrong way to put it, but they have a lot of talent suddenly around CJ Stroud and D'Amico Ryans in that roster. Now, they made some additions this offseason, mostly on the defensive side of the ball, with Daniil Hunter, D'Nico Autry coming in, Azeez Al-Shaair being signed from Tennessee, but they really had not done much on offense outside of bring Joe Mixon in as a replacement for Devin Singletary, and that seemed reasonable enough, right? They had a good offense last year. They have plenty of pieces coming back. They'd invested a ton in the offense the years prior. They bring back Dalton Schultz. I have to admit, I didn't have wide receiver as like their biggest need, given that they had Nico Collins and Tank Dell already on the roster. But man, I mean, getting Stephon Diggs feels like it. You can't really complain about what you're doing for, your franchise quarterback in year two.
Yeah, like you said, this is what you're supposed to do when you know you have a guy on a rookie contract. You surround him with as much talent as you need in order to go win the Super Bowl while the quarterback is still cheap. Yes, Nico Collins and Tank Dell are amazing young players, but you still need another guy because, you know, Tank Dell, a little on the smaller side, he can play more of the slot, the super slot role, and Stephon Diggs can kind of age gracefully into that 1B. You know, I think in Buffalo, he was consistently having to be the 1A that we knew he was in previous years, but Stephon Diggs is getting a little older. So now he can kind of gracefully age into the 1B role while Nico Collins takes the 1A. Tank Dell has more of a slot role. But like I said, this is what the Texans are doing, everything that you need to do when you know you have a good quarterback on a rookie contract, and that surround him with every single piece you can in order to go win the Super Bowl while that guy is still cheap.
Absolutely. And the Texans can have a lot of flexibility still. CJ Stroud, I want to say making about $8 million a year, which is just sad thinking about it from the Daniel Jones perspective. Like, unfortunately, I now judge every NFL contract as what percentage of Daniel Jones's deal are they making? And about 20% for CJ Stroud, which seems like it's a good opportunity for the Texans. In terms of that big three, and I guess we could add Schultz as well. And if you want to do Mixon as well, if you want to talk about the playmakers on the whole, with Diggs, Collins, Dell, Schultz, Mixon, Do you think this is the best group of playmakers in football? Do you still put San Francisco ahead of them? Where do you think the Texans come in terms of what they have with their playmakers for CJ Stroud?
I don't think it's the best in football, but I think it's all very complementary to each other.
Yep.
You know, Stephon Diggs is the easy separator. You know, he can create separation in the short to intermediate range. We've seen what Tank Dell can do downfield, and that allows Nico Collins to kind of succeed more in the 12 to 15 yard range,
yep.
where Nico Collins was at his best last year. You think of all those glance routes, those digs that CJ Stroud was hitting last year, they were to Nico Collins. And now you add Dalton Schultz on top of that, who is a reliable safety valve at tight end, who can sometimes be a vertical field stretcher, you know? So now you have a bunch of guys who all fit together very well. And you have a guy who could potentially be a force multiplier at quarterback in CJ Stroud on top of an offensive line that really gelled together and has a lot of talent. This, I'm not going to say it's the best position, best skill position group or collection of talent in the NFL, but they have quickly become one of the best in the AFC.
I think I had them at like 31 last year when I did these rankings, and they're going to be top three this year at the very least. That's the strides they've made in the year, both in terms of how their talent has improved, in terms of the additions they've made, and now adding Stephon Diggs on top of all of this. And, you know, like from the off-field perspective, like Stephon Diggs certainly seemed to be like frustrated, might be a nice way to put it, at times in Buffalo. For various reasons, he had the reputation in Minnesota. It doesn't bother me too much. Like, that's pretty much every good wide receiver has that reputation at one point or another, so I'm not going to judge him for that. But one thing that's interesting about this from Houston's side is they're not super committed here. Like, the Bills already paid Diggs's $21.5 million signing bonus. They paid him a $16 million option bonus last year. So a lot of the money that was coming out in this new deal is already taken out from Houston's perspective. They have him for $18.5 million this year in terms of a base salary, plus a couple of roster and workout bonuses that are about $19 million in total. And then really this $18.5 million next year that's not guaranteed. I mean, if this goes totally south for some reason, and I don't think it will, not saying it's going to be an Antonio Brown situation because they're two totally different people, just saying, like, hypothetically, if this went really south and really negatively for the Texans, they could move on next year. You wouldn't want to give a second round pick for that, but they could get out of it if they needed to without it having be a truly damaging situation to their organization. So it feels like, even though you're giving up a two next year, it does feel like a pretty worthwhile risk given the upside we know Stephon Diggs possesses.
It feels like a good risk for the Texans to make, especially because, you know, they did trade their first round pick to the Vikings this year. And of course, this receiver class is fairly loaded, but any receiver you get at what pick was it that they have this year? 42? Any pick that you have at that point probably isn't going to be what Stephon Diggs is as a receiver this year, you know? So you're going all in for this year, for next year as well, with Stephon Diggs and CJ Stroud still being on the rookie deal. So it makes a lot of sense for the Texans to make this move at this time. You know, they saw how far they could go last year and weren't complacent, like a lot of teams, especially a team in the AFC South that got complacent after making the playoffs and winning the playoff game.
Yeah. And I mean, we can talk about the Jags if in terms of what they did not do unnecessarily, but let's talk about the Bill side of the situation, because right now, and I know the draft is coming and I think we're all going to project them to take a wide receiver at one point or another. Right now, the Bills number one receiver is Curtis Samuel, Dalton Kincaid, I guess. Like, it's bleak out there if you're a Buffalo Bills supporter right now. How can I put this? We don't know necessarily what happened behind the scenes. We don't know if the Bills just decided, hey, we want to be out of the Stephon Diggs business and we're going to take the best available offer, and that's that. Clearly, they have had cap concerns this year for a few different reasons. the Von Miller trade, this Stephon Diggs extension, which turned out horribly for them, Josh Allen making a ton of money. They're in a transitional period, but in terms of what they do next, JP, do you, if you're them, are you trying to now trade up for a wide receiver? Are you looking at the trade market yourself? Like, are you trying to go out and get a T. Higgins? Or I don't think the Bengals would trade them T. Higgins, but are you trying to go out and get a Brandon Ayuk for a first round pick if you can? Like, how do you approach this if you're the Bills? Are you sort of slowly making a move and just sort of hoping that you can draft and develop well? Or are you trying to make a move for a veteran who can help you win this upcoming season?
I kind of think they should trade up for a guy in the draft, mm-hmm. you know, especially with all the teams trying to move up to trade for a quarterback. One of those top three guys is going to fall. And if they fall around to the ninth pick range, where the Bears, who very clearly have already made it known what they're going to do at one, but nine mm-hmm. is still very unclear. The Bears can trade back. Ryan Poles loves to accumulate draft picks. Mm-hmm. Maybe if the Bills can get all the way up to nine and draft a receiver, that would make a lot of sense. I'm not sure how high they can go, especially going from pick 28. It's rare to go from 28 to 9 in one big jump. Yeah. But I could also see them doing the Ayuk or the T. Higgins trade, because mm-hmm. their first round pick is exactly in the T. Higgins like trade comp range, mm-hmm. like the back end of the first, early portion of the second. But in terms of on field, I get why the Bills would do this. Mm-hmm. It just feels like they're gonna draft a guy. I think they're gonna draft a guy instead of trading for an established veteran.
Just based on how they approach things, I know they traded for Stephon Diggs. They almost traded for Antonio Brown a few years ago. It's like they've been on that market, but that was when Josh Allen was on a rookie deal. And that's the calculus of the money in the NFL. Like, the reality is it's a lot easier to trade for those guys when you have quarterbacks making a fraction of what they are worth. It's nothing new. It's been the meta in the NFL for over a decade now. And I think they, you know, if they can get a good deal for T. Higgins, I don't think you would say no necessarily, but I agree with you. I think they are in position to trade up for a wide receiver. It's tough. I mean, you don't know who's going to be there necessarily. It might be a thing where you have to wait until draft day and hope that you have a landing spot at 12 or 14 or 15. If you can't get up to 9, maybe you have to have a couple deals in place with teams, or if your guy's available, you make the trade. But on the other hand, maybe if you're the Bills, you sit here and say, hey, like, Stephon Diggs was not the guy we were hoping for most of 2023. He had 5 100-yard games, which is kind of cheating because he had like a 100-yard game and a 102-yard game, but it's a big round number. So 5 100-yard games in the first 6 weeks last year, and then none afterwards. Did not top 90 yards once, averaged like, I want to say 65-ish yards from week 7 onward. Did not play well, or did not have a significant role in the postseason. 73 total yards in 2 games there. Like, if what are the chances we look back at this trade and say the Bills were right to move on from Stephon Diggs because he was not the player who we were expecting, or sort of the player we associate with his name, with his reputation? Like, what, this is a tough way to put it, which is why I'm asking you as opposed to being brave and answering it myself. What are the chances Stephon Diggs is washed?
So I wanted to look something up really quick because I thought it was interesting mentioning how the lack of 100-yard games and how Stephon Diggs wasn't necessarily mm-hmm. the guy that they wanted him to be last year. And all those 100-yard games you mentioned all came before Ken Dorsey was fired. So after Joe Brady took over and the Bills kind of leaned more into that run game, into mm-hmm. quicker, instead of being the highly volatile deep ball or no ball offense we associate with the Bills now, they kind of matriculated more to being better on the ground, being better in the short to intermediate areas. And that meant not a lot of targets for Stephon Diggs, especially when you think about how well the Bills ran the ball last year. If you're running it well, you don't have to throw the ball. And that's something that doesn't necessarily translate to what Stephon Diggs did. after Ken Dorsey got fired again after the Denver game, the highest amount of yards that Stephon Diggs had in the game was 87 in the last game of the season against the Dolphins. Before that, it was 74 against Philadelphia. These are not the numbers becoming of a superstar receiver. I think I'm hesitant to say Stephon Diggs is washed, but I think he is getting closer to 1B than he is 1A at the moment.
Yeah, and that's still a useful player, and they did not pay a crazy amount to get that guy. So could see this being a win-win. I think, like, the loss was the Diggs extension a couple of years ago. Like, that was the big mistake the Bills made, and that's a sunk cost at this point. So could honestly see a scenario where this works for all parties involved, but man, it just, I know it hurts to be a Jaguars fan in this situation. It can't feel good to be a Bills fan right now and say, hey, why are we trading our top receiver, our only significant wide receiver of note left on the roster? We did just lose the very successful and talented Gabe Davis to the Jacksonville Jaguars. We just lost Stephon Diggs. We traded him to not just another team, but realistically a team who we're probably competing with in the postseason, like a team we wouldn't be shocked if we saw, you know, down the line in January. Like, that has to feel like it's painful.
So it feels, from the Bills' perspective, it feels a lot like this is their version of the Tyreek Hill trade that the Chiefs made, because this feels like a bet more on Josh Allen than it is on any of the surrounding talent for the Bills' skill position group. And what I mean by that is, when the Chiefs traded Tyreek Hill, everybody was like, oh, wow, like, you're trading this superstar receiver. And yes, it became an ultimate win for the Miami Dolphins. But the Chiefs also won two titles after that, and Patrick Mahomes has still played some of the best football of his career. I think with this trade for the Bills, this is a bet on Josh Allen becoming a even better quarterback without that superstar receiver. You know that Josh Allen is one of the three best quarterbacks in the league. But now that you have him on this massive contract, the Bills have to win in the drafting area. And they haven't necessarily drafted very well early. They haven't drafted very well on the first 2 days of the draft. Mm-hmm. So seeing what they're going to do, especially if they pick a receiver, and seeing what kind of receiver they like, is going to be really interesting to me when it comes around to their pick at 28. But this feels a lot like they're trying to do their version of, all right, the Chiefs lost in the AFC Championship game to the Bengals because they couldn't be efficient in the passing game. Trade Tyreek Hill, they become one of the most efficient buzzsaw offenses we've ever seen. It feels like the Bills trying to do that. Ever since the 13 seconds, the Bills have been trying to recreate everything that the Chiefs have done. And I'm not sure if it's going to work, but I'm excited to see it.
We're going to see Khalil Shakir start dating a very successful pop star. No, you're 100% correct, JP. We talked about this last year a little bit when it came to how they approach things. Because remember the famous meta with the Chiefs a couple of years ago was, oh, the teams just played two deep safeties and Patrick Mahomes doesn't know what to do, which was stupid. But, like, teams were taking away big plays. And so the Chiefs trade Tyreek Hill. They double their 12 usage. They play a ton more 13 personnel. Like, they get bigger and they're more comfortable running, you know, more gap concepts up front. And they got away from it at times, but it's won them two Super Bowls. Last year, the Bills go out and they draft Dalton Kincaid. And so it's okay. We're going to be in 12 with Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox as our base offense. And Dalton Kincaid is not, you know, he's not maybe a traditional tight end. Maybe he's more like a Travis Kelce. So, kind of felt like that was something they were going to do. And I think they are looking at what's working around the league and saying, hey, you know, especially the Chiefs, and saying, hey, like, if that, maybe that's a path for us. And I'll be really intrigued to see. There's still plenty of time left in this offseason. There's still free agents out there, still the draft to come, but Bills have some work to do for sure in the weeks to come. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better with the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country. There is no competition. And right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a Jets Pizza location near you. Again, try Jets Signature 8-Corner Pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza, better because it has to be.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay. So our original topic for today is relevant to this conversation, to me at least. We were going to talk about the teams who have to nail this draft, is basically the nicest way to put it. The teams who, a lot of teams have a lot riding on this draft, but the teams who it feels like have to get their picks right in this draft, whether it be that they need to get to the next level, whether it mean that their coach or GM might get fired. Basically the teams who need to be sitting here a year from now saying, man, we got our picks right. We nailed that draft. We are in a good spot. And so I came up with a few. I believe you did as well, JP. You are the guest. Let's start with this and let's see where this goes in terms of give me a team who you feel like has more riding on this draft than maybe other teams around the NFL.
My first one is going to be the Denver Broncos. I think.
Okay. I like it.
Every move that the Broncos have made this year, this feels like this is Sean Payton getting the chance to actually do what Sean Payton wants to do. Defensively, he was stuck to Russell Wilson last year, and that was not a good fit for either side. Russell Wilson is not a Sean Payton quarterback, even though he is short. That is not that's not what Russell Wilson and Sean Payton, like, they don't mesh together very well. Mm-hmm. But the problem is at 12, you're realistically out of range of the top four quarterbacks in this draft. But you also don't have a second round pick. So if you don't draft a guy at 12 or trade back in the first round, you're waiting until round 3 when maybe guys like Michael Penix, maybe Bo Nix will be available there. Michael Pratt, somebody that they've been linked to. So this is an important draft for them, not only because you have to get the quarterback this year, but if you miss on this quarterback, if you draft him in the first round and miss, you're strapped to that guy. Mm-hmm. You're creating another hole in this team, especially when Courtland Sutton getting older. You have so many holes that are beginning to show up on this team that now it's a big thing. It's a big problem because you have to get this quarterback pick right, but the cards aren't necessarily aligning for you to get that guy in the first round. But what are you going to do? You know, you got to get a guy.
You don't think Jared Stidham's going to be the guy?
Oh, maybe if it was 2015 and we're talking about like Auburn, Jared Stidham, but who else is on there? Who else is in that room?
Ben DiNucci.
Oh, there we go.
Who's not even the most famous Italian-American quarterback backing up on an NFL roster right now. He got usurped by Tommy DeVito, I feel like.
It feels like DiNucci, Tommy DeVito, and Jimmy G are like the father, son, Holy Spirit of Italian backup quarterbacks. So he's got to make some more things shake. He's got to come in and like absolutely light up the Raiders one year or one game.
I love it. Just a revenge game for that. You're absolutely correct. And this is a really good point. Like this is why I think this exercise is important, because sure, the Bears, they need to get their quarterback pick right, but they are at least in position to get that pick correct. They have the first overall pick. They are in a spot where they can take whoever they want. I assume they're going to take Caleb Williams. I think a lot of us assume they're going to take Caleb Williams, but they have the first pick. They have the 9th pick. They have significant draft capital to do what they want. So they don't have to go into the draft or go into draft day nervous that they're not going to even be in a position to get their guy. And I think to your point, for the Broncos, that's such a real concern for them. And they're, I'm a little concerned about what they're going to do and how aggressive they're going to be from a Broncos fan perspective, just because of what they did last year. I mean, they did not have a ton of draft capital last year because of the Russell Wilson and Sean Payton trades. Figured it would have made sense to trade down for extra picks. What did they do? They repeatedly traded up in the draft. They traded up for Riley Moss, I believe, which cost them a pick this year. They've made some trades for some other players as well. I think Marvin Mims they moved up for as well, if I'm not mistaken. Like, they had to, or they chose to be very aggressive moving up for guys last year when they were down significant draft capital. And now, I mean, they've really done a lot to cut stuff off this roster. They don't have a ton left from before the 2021 draft. And Cortland Sutton, Riley Dixon, two of the few players who are still there from, you know, before the 2021 draft. So this team does not have a lot of young talent. They don't have a great cap situation. They are the prototypical team to me in terms of they have to get this draft right. Because if they do, then they're in good shape. Then they are in position to maybe build on some of the talent they have and be a competitive team. But after last year, when they spent a ton in free agency, traded up repeatedly, they have all these missing draft picks from years past, like, they are in such a weird spot. It doesn't feel like they're close to competing. They're not like anybody else in football to me.
It's such a weird spot to be in because it's clear that they don't have a lot of, it's clear that they don't have the supreme amount of talent where they can, you can logically go, oh, if you just drop a quarterback in here, it'll all work out fine. Like, this isn't a team like the Falcons who you could go, oh, if you you drop Kirk Cousins in here, you can see the vision, you know, but you're at a point with the 12th pick this year where you can't, you don't have enough capital to trade up to draft a guy, but you don't have enough capital to say, we'll wait until our second round pick because you don't have a second round pick. So they're in a prime position where, you know, if another one of the guys, another one of the top receivers begins to fall, maybe the Broncos are a team that trades back with a receiver needy. And that way you kind of sneak back into the end of the first round and take Bo Nix if you really want him there. I don't know if I'm taking Bo Nix in the first round, but they're in such a weird spot going forward. I'm very curious to see how they map out their long-term future.
Mm-hmm. Another team that I feel like is in a weird spot, partially related to what happened with Sean Payton, was the New Orleans Saints, where they do not have a ton of cap space, as usual, unsurprisingly. They have major questions about what's happening around the line of scrimmage. Tackle with Trevor Penning, not disappointing, with Ryan Ramczyk's future uncertain because of a knee issue. At edge, they go out and sign Chase Young, who has a neck injury and might not be ready to start the year. They have Cameron Jordan, who had two sacks last year, dealing with a high ankle sprain in his mid-30s. His production's gone down dramatically over the past 2 years. They have Carl Granderson, who played well last year, so they're not bereft on the edge if those guys don't work out. But in terms of the short and long-term for this organization, they're the oldest team in football. They have a cap situation that's not going to get better anytime soon. They're committed to Derek Carr probably for at least one more year. I would guess they keep him for two based on their situation, but they could, if they want to get aggressive, move on. And they have a lot of missing capital. They have the 14th pick. They have the 45th selection from the Sean Payton trade, but they lost the 50th pick in the Trevor Penning deal. They lost their third round pick in the Payton deal, and they lost their fourth round pick because they traded into last year's draft to get Jake Haener, who, I mean, I don't know that he's the quarterback of the future for the Saints, but they were willing to make him a priority. This is another team. I forget where I saw this, so I feel really bad not attributing it, but I saw it on Twitter somewhere. Mickey Loomis hasn't traded down since like 2007.
The Saints are so funny.
That's the right way to put it.
They're the dude at the blackjack table who has already lost like $10,000 tonight, but it's like, hit me. We're here. We're still here. We might not be driving home in the car that we came in, but hit me. we might hit once, but you make a really great point about the offensive line and how that has just consistently taken a step backwards. And with Ryan Ramczyk's health being sort of up in the air and Trevor Penning just absolutely not working out, you need to hit on the offensive line in order for Derek Carr to kind of be anything, which is what you're hoping for after last year. Like, you need Derek Carr to be something. You can't make that move and not have him turn out to be anything in an NFC South, which, despite still adding the Falcons, adding Kirk Cousins, is still up for anyone's grabs outside of like Carolina. But this, the Saints are in such an odd spot again because, like you said, they are kind of in the, they've been playing the middle game where they have a lot of aging vets, but they don't want to completely go fire sale and tank. Mm-hmm. But you can't realistically talk yourself into this team making a deep run in the playoffs. Like, it's either you win the division or you don't make the playoffs. But you can't really get off of Derek Carr right now because of that contract. So I think what they do at 14 will be very interesting in terms of what they think long-term and short-term goal is. I think they go off at the line. You just have to. Trevor Penning has not been of anything. He's
bad.
Yeah, he's bad. He is bad. And with Ramczyk potentially not being around because of his knee injury, you can slide Trevor Penning to right, or you can have him play guard if you want, if you really want to try and do that and draft a guy at left tackle. I think Brian Thomas from LSU would make sense, especially in that receiver room, which, hey, I don't know. It's Chris Olave. Rashid Shaheed has some fun moments, but that's a lot. There's a lot of question marks there.
No question. No question. I could absolutely see them taking a wide receiver and saying, hey, we're all in around Derek Carr. We got to get him another piece in the passing game. We don't have that guy. I know they signed Cedric Wilson, but I don't think Cedric Wilson is that difference maker. I think tackle is a legitimate, there has to be their top priority. If there's a guy they like, this is Mickey Loomis to it, but I looked it up while you were talking. He has not traded down since 2007, which is terrifying. Could they trade up for a tackle? Could they try to get in? Could they be the team that calls the Bears about the ninth pick and say, hey, we want to try and get one of the tackles before, you know, they come off the board? I could see them considering that. So there's a logic in my head for what I think the Saints should do. And there's a totally different answer when I ask myself, what are the Saints going to do? So I don't want to rule anything out for them. They're a team that operates in their own unique way. And that is fun, but maybe not something I would want to be a part of. So we'll see what happens there. JP, give me another team you think has a lot riding on this year's draft.
I'm going to stick in the AFC, and I'm going to go with the Miami Dolphins. Okay. I am very interested in what the Miami Dolphins do from this point on. And the biggest reason is because Tua is not going to be cheap anymore. Whatever happens with that contract, or whatever happens there, you need to operate as if you have to pay Tua a lot of money coming up. I don't know if they will, but with the way that quarterback contracts have been getting doled out, Tua could make a lot of money, and he has a good reason to demand a lot of money. But when you look at where the Dolphins have kind of faltered over the last few seasons, it has always been because of health and unsustainable offense. The offense has never been sustainable when you get deep into the postseason or deep into the last parts of the regular season. Yep. I think with the moves that they have made this offseason, with letting both of their interior offensive linemen go, letting the center walk, they are very clearly trying to upgrade along the offensive line. And defensively, you let Vic Fangio go. It was very clear that something was not meshing with Fangio leaving, and then every Dolphins player immediately going, thank God. Something was up that I don't know what happened there. But you have to replace Andrew Van Ginkle, Jalen Phillips coming off a season-ending injury, Bradley Chubb coming off a season-ending injury. You got to replace Christian Wilkins in that production front. There are a lot of gaps defensively and a lot of crucial gaps offensively, where this is very important for the Dolphins' future, especially as we get to as we look in the division, because last year Aaron Rodgers got hurt early. They didn't have to worry about the Jets much. Aaron Rodgers probably isn't going to get hurt four plays into the first game of the season anymore. And that team is going to be really good with any average quarterback play. So now you go from being the second best team in the division and challenging for that top spot to, hey man, we might need to make the wild card. We might need to just hope for the wild card here. It becomes crucial, their offseason moves now, because you're running out of leeway with the Tua contract. He's been playing on a rookie deal, and now you're going to have to pay him a lot of money. And where you go from here is going to be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the only one, too. I mean, they have to pay Jalen Waddle. They could pay him this year. They could also wait a year and try to get that done next year. Jalen Phillips, like you mentioned, is coming off of another Achilles, unfortunately, but he's eligible for an extension. He's a really good player. Javon Holland, their excellent safety, is eligible for an extension. Like, they have a lot of guys they're going to need to pay, and they're in the reason they let a lot of those guys go, who you mentioned, with Wilkins being the most prominent one, was because of cap concerns, because they did not have a lot of money to work with. They re-signed Austin Jackson up front, so he's going to stick at right tackle. Maybe he ends up at left tackle when Teron Armstead moves on, which could be after this year, but that is a concerning interior of the offensive line. And Isaiah Wynn comes back. He was good last year before he got hurt. They sign Aaron Brewer from Tennessee, who you watch the AFC South closely. I never watched the Tennessee interior offensive line and thought, man, that's a guy I need to go target. But Daniel is smarter than me, so maybe they'll get more flexible. They bring in Johnny Smith at tight end, but I agree with you. I mean, this is a team that has been not all in recent years, but they were aggressive with Tua on a rookie deal, going out and trading for Tyreek Hill, going out and trading for Bradley Chubb, and spending a lot in free agency last year, trading for Jalen Ramsey, basically saying we're the team that's willing to absorb his salary and guarantee it for a couple of years. They have to transition now because, like you said, either Tua is getting expensive, or if they don't resign Tua, they're going to do something else at quarterback, which is going to require a lot of resources. So they're in such a unique position. I think that's a really good point. I wasn't thinking Dolphins, but you were 100% correct. And, you know, they don't have the sort of surplus of capital they had from all those, from the Laremy Tunsil trade, from the Trey Lance trade. Like, that's mostly gone now. So they're in such a unique position. To me, you know, I know they have to rebuild the defense. I know they lost a bunch of pieces on defense. I still kind of think, you know, the offensive line has to be the biggest priority. If there's something you think they're going to target first and foremost, is it the offensive line, or would it be more on the defensive side of the ball?
I think you got to go offensive line early because of how good this offensive line class is. They need somebody up there. Even with a retooled offensive line last year, a lot of their issues were you can stop the Dolphins' offense or slow them down at least if you get pressure up the middle. They need to fix the interior of the offensive line. Austin Jackson played really well moving from left to right, and Teron Armstead is Teron Armstead. But the guard positions, now that you have to replace Robert Hunt in the run game, you got once they had a lot of their injuries happen, and now those guys are on other teams, that offensive line took a major hit. And adding a guy like Graham Barton, who can play center, he can play guard, he can play tackle, I think he's a phenomenal, he'll be a phenomenal guard. I think adding him or a Troy Fatanu would immediately boost that offensive line. And then you can use the day two or day three picks to help bolster the depth of the defense. I think that is the big issue defensively. They don't have a lot of depth, which, I mean, a lot of teams don't have depth, but they really struggle with depth.
Yeah, and I mean, even some of the guys they have up front, Armstead is a perennial injury risk. Austin Jackson's missed a ton of time. Like, it is a serious concern for them. I'll throw the Raiders out there. And this is interesting because they're not a team that has a bunch of missing draft capital. They have their full complement of draft picks, and they have a roster that in some places is very limited by missing all those draft picks from the John Gruden era that failed. In some places looks pretty good. I mean, they went out and signed Christian Wilkins. Max Crosby is phenomenal. Malcolm Kuntz played well down the stretch when he was playing on the edge last year. They did not get a lot out of Tyree Wilson, their first round pick from a year ago. Maybe he gets better in his second season, but the secondary is major questions. The offensive line outside of Colton Miller is still a questionable situation. And there's quarterback, which they signed Gardner Minshew. I'm not going to slander Gardner Minshew on this podcast. Aiden O'Connell did fine, I guess, at the end of the year. I don't think his numbers were especially impressive. I would not want to commit to him. But this is a team that has whiffed on so many drafts over the recent years, especially on day one and day two. So many of those Gruden Mayock era drafts just ended up being a disaster. And those guys either got traded or disappointed or are not around on the roster anymore. This is what I think is so interesting about them. So they can tell themselves a story, right? Like the Raiders were 8-9 last year, just missed out on the postseason. They were 5-4 with Antonio Pierce. The defense was really good after the bye for them under Patrick Graham. And now they go out and they add Christian Wilkins. To me, that tells me at the very least, they are considering themselves to be playoff contenders. If you're them, how aggressive are you in packaging what you have to try and get JJ McCarthy or get a quarterback or maybe get Drake May? Like, are you selling out to get that quarterback in the top four if you can, or are you trying to be a little more patient with your roster? Where do you, if you're the Raiders and you're Tom Telesco, how do you feel about where you stand right now?
The signing of Christian Wilkins means you got to go trade up and get your guy. You got to go find that guy now. You got to go get him in one of the top 10 picks. And I think it was really interesting. I think a few weeks back, Antonio Pierce was talking about JJ McCarthy and being like, yeah, you can see why a lot of teams like him. He's a winner. He's got he hasn't lost so many games at Michigan. And to me, that screamed, I want somebody to trade up for JJ McCarthy so Jaden Daniels can fall to me. Antonio Pierce coached Jaden Daniels at Arizona State. I think that's the guy who they really, really want. But either way, they should trade up for a guy. The moves that they made necessitate having to trading up for a guy. Just because you signed Gardner Minshew to be your bridge does not mean that is a playoff team. That is the furthest away from a playoff team move, signing Gardner Minshew. But I think they're in a very similar boat to the Broncos, where, like you said, they are right on the outer edge of outside the QB zone, but you know, you can't really trade or wait for the day two guys because you might miss out on Michael Penix. If you really believe in Michael Penix and what he can do, I think Vegas would be a okay fit. I'm not sure what Luke Getsy wants to do offensively, which I feel like I've been saying for like the past 3 years, but they have to go get their guy. Making the Christian Wilkins signing, the things that they have done this year necessitates going and getting their guy now.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with you. I will say the way you talk about Michael Penix and Bo Nix, like the laughter and fear that comes into your voice when you bring up those players for these teams seems telling. Seems like it may matter when it comes to the evals on these players. I agree with you. I don't think the Raiders should be all in or be very aggressive, but I do think the moves they've made make me believe that they think they should be aggressive. Maybe they should be at this point. Maybe they're just priced in and they should be really aggressive and go out and get a quarterback, but they have a lot to work with this year. I mean, they need help on the offensive line. I think they need to add at least one guard in this draft. They probably need help at cornerback. They did lose Nick Robertson to the Lions. I know they like Jack Jones, but Jack Jones was a waiver wire acquisition last year. I don't think you can guarantee he's going to be a superstar with the Raiders. So, I mean, we will see, but they're a team that I would not be shocked if they were very aggressive on draft day. And maybe aggressive does not mean trading up. Maybe aggressive means taking, like you said, Michael, picking the fifth quarterback in this draft at 13, when maybe he's not a top 15 talent.
Yeah, that means you have to draft a guy. You have to draft that quarterback early. If you're not trading up for him, you begin to wonder, like, what's the plan here long term? Because, We initially thought this would be the rust spot, but he ends up going to Pittsburgh. You miss out on the vet quarterbacks who can help take you from being 8-9 and missing the playoffs to potentially being a true playoff contender. But now you need to go get that young quarterback who can kind of be that long-term plan. But I'm not really sure that they're in the range to do that unless you trade up. And like you said, maybe they pick the fifth best guy at 13, but the drop off from 3 to 4 is pretty steep. But the drop off from 4 to 5, there are a lot of questions that have to be asked. But on that same note, a lot of the rumors have been that the upcoming quarterback class in 2025 is not one that you want to go, we'll punt and wait for 2025. You might need to go get your guy now because you might not have a lot of faith in whatever happens in next year's quarterback class.
They don't seem like an organization that thinks about 2025 very much. Like I have not watched the Raiders over the past decade and felt like there is a real long-term vision. And to be fair, they have made changes. John Gruden's not running this team. Josh McDaniels is not running this team. But when they have the same issues, regime after regime, that maybe makes me think that it might not be the coach or the GM who is that impatient. But we will see. They're a fascinating team to watch coming up on draft day.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
JP, do you want to give me one more team as we finish up here?
Yes. And my team, I'm going to ask you a question here.
Oh, no.
What are the Dallas Cowboys doing? What is happening with the Dallas Cowboys? Everything that they have done has not screamed all in like their owner has said multiple times this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
On a smaller scale, you can understand letting Tyron Smith walk. Age, injury concerns, hasn't played a lot. But now you've created a hole at left tackle, and if you want to move Tyler Smith, who is an all-pro guard, to tackle, you're now having to replace an all-pro guard and not just trying to go find a tackle. You have to replace Tyler Biadasz, who was your starting center. Darren Steele did not play that well at right tackle. You still need a wide receiver. The defense is, that's going to take a little bit more work, especially when you think about the fact that they got ran over by Green Bay the last time.
They sure did.
So their entire goal this offseason has felt like, oh, we'll just wait for the draft to go draft a tackle, a linebacker, and a running back. But the way that the free agent class for running back and linebacker have been, the response to the free agent class has kind of given us a look at what front offices think of the upcoming linebacker and running back draft class. And they might not think that highly. So unless the Cowboys are just zagging where everyone else is zigging, I'm so confused on what their offseason has been and how that pertains to what they're going to do in the draft. This is a very important draft for them because they don't want to fall behind. With Green Bay taking the boot to the behind, Dallas a little bit.
That's nice. That's a nice way to put it.
It feels
squash
a little
bit. They squashed them, JP.
It was so jarring to see them completely run over and Dallas not respond. It felt like they rolled over. And now we go into an offseason of, okay, so the 49ers are the cream of the crop in the NFC. But now we're thinking Detroit. Now Green Bay's got a dude at quarterback. The Eagles are still going to be there. What have the What have the Cowboys done this offseason to give you faith in what they're going to do in this upcoming season? It's not much. They've just created more holes. So I'm really confused on what Dallas has done this entire offseason, and it makes this draft incredibly important.
Yeah, the weird part for me is that it's not as if every player they lost had a big market. If you want to say you had to let Tyron Smith go, okay, I understand. Like, you brought up the reasons why, but they could have brought back Stephon Gilmore. They could have competed for some other players. They could have brought back Tyler Biadasz. It wasn't like Biadasz's salary was, you know, crazy. They could have competed for Tony Pollard or brought in someone to replace Tony Pollard if they wanted to let Tony Pollard go. The big thing that looms for me, and this is some of the calculus, I'm sure, but maybe not all of it, is their best players are all due raises. CeeDee Lamb is entering his fifth year option and is going to get a massive deal. Micah Parsons is now eligible for an extension. He's going to get a record-setting deal. And I don't know what's going to happen with Dak. I mean, it depends on who you ask. But Dak is due, presumably, a massive extension that's going to give him a raise. So that's another probably $20 million a year for Dak. It's another $30 million a year for Micah. No, they're probably $25, $30 million more for CeeDee Lamb if you don't count the fifth-year option. That's $80 million you weren't spending on last year's roster. I know that you can move money around. The Cowboys will. I know they'll be flexible, but that has to be part of it, right? Like, I think that was one of the reasons why they had to be a little more conservative than people were expecting. But even when you account for that, it feels like there's a real, you know, lack of opportunities there. And just in terms of, you know, like, they could have gone out and signed one of the running backs. It wasn't like the Zach Mosses of the world were getting crazy money and they chose not to do that. It wasn't as if, you know, Trent Brown, for example, who has left tackle experience, who's big, can be physical, he got a really tiny deal from the Bengals. I was shocked at how low that was. They could have competed for him and then had another option to tackle. You know, I don't know if this is just a change in philosophy, whether it's just a thing of, hey, we were all in last year and we didn't make it very far and we needed to try to transition into what we're being. Maybe it's just the changes on the defensive side of the personnel and Mike Zimmer thinks they're better off drafting players this year, but there has to be a balance, right? Like you're not stuck in the binary options of we are going all in and we're keeping everyone we can and we're you know, going to be a terrible team the next couple of years, or we don't sign anybody besides Eric Kendricks. And I would have figured they'd be more in the middle, and they're not. They're really been so conservative, and they have a lot of work to do. I think it's not just the draft for them. I think they have to go out in veteran free agency, you know, maybe after the draft, and be aggressive signing guys. And there still are players out there. Dalton Risner's out there, who was good for the Vikings last year, who could step in at guard. There's people, there's guys like Gilmore who are still available in the secondary who could be, you know, part of their defense. Actually, they did re-sign Jordan Lewis. Maybe they don't need a cornerback if Trevon Diggs is going to be 100%. But pieces up front, depth up front, after losing guys like Dorrance Armstrong, is something they're going to have to do. They're in a weird spot. And I do think the contracts for those three stars are part of it. But the fact that you have the sort of the specter of the Dak situation hanging over this team, like, if they're not re-signing Dak, and I'm not saying that's going to happen, but certainly there have been people who have said the Cowboys are not aggressively pursuing a contract for Dak. If they're not re-signing Dak, I think you have to approach this differently. You have to be more aggressive going out and getting talent, because you are going to have a much cheaper option at quarterback next year, whether that be Trey Lance or somebody else. So I'm fascinated. I can sort of make an argument for it, but there's still something missing here. There's some piece of information, whether it's with Dak, whether it's with some of the other players, that would really inform what they're doing. Because I think even if you argue they should be conservative, and I think that's fair given what they have to pay, they've been more conservative than I would have guessed.
It feels like a lack of urgency. And
yeah, that's a great way to put it.
A lack of urgency is you're going to wait to pay Dak, but then Dak's going to get really expensive after whatever happens with Tua, whatever happens with a Jared Goff extension, whatever happens with Trevor Lawrence's extension. you're going to have to pay Dak Prescott around that range. You're going to have to pay him a lot of money. You're going to wait to extend CeeDee Lamb. That might not be the best move because Brandon Ayuk is going to get a lot of money. T. Higgins is going to get a lot of money. Ja'Marr Chase is going to get a lot of money. Justin Jefferson might get the entire GDP of a small country. You're going to have to pay that guy, CeeDee Lamb, a lot of money. You're going to wait to pay Micah Parsons. He's going to have to get a lot of money. Brian Burns just got $157 million. Micah Parsons is going to command that amount of money. So it feels like instead of getting out ahead of it now and winning within the margins for this year to make sure that they still have their core guys locked up, they're just pushing it back. They're going to keep pushing it back. But eventually, you might get priced out. You might end up being like, hey, we can't pay all three of these guys at the same time, and one of them's going to have to go. One of them's going to want their money. So I'm really just confused on what their entire goal has been, especially, like you said, because their biggest move was signing Eric Kendricks, who might not be that much of a difference maker on defense, especially with where they need help against the run. Losing Jonathan Hankins, who the entire process behind their interior defensive line has been really bad. You draft Mozzie Smith first round, who is a big nose tackle. You make him lose weight, so he loses the effectiveness against the run. You go sign Jonathan Hankins to stop the run over your first round defensive tackle, and then let Jonathan Hankins walk at the end of that. It just feels like they are consistently making these odd missteps and a position where you no longer are the specter of the Dallas Cowboys no longer can carry you, because you're getting into a generation of guys who've only seen the Cowboys stink. You've only seen the Cowboys be bad and lose in the playoffs. You can't just go in and be like, there's a star. Want to come play for the star? No, a lot of guys don't want to do that. And now you're falling behind teams like the Eagles. You're falling behind teams like the Lions and the 49ers and the Packers.
And the Texans. The Texans in the same state.
The Texans went out and, again, they just traded for Stephon Diggs. They signed Danielle Hunter. They have been aggressive. They have been at the front lines of free agency, going out and getting better. And the Cowboys have just been kind of complacent, which is really odd going into a year where they can't afford to be complacent anymore. You no longer are the cream of the crop. When was the last time they have been? But it's just, it's really odd what they're doing. And I'm fascinated, but negatively fascinated. I don't want to see what happens, but I'm excited to see it.
Yeah. The perfect team to finish up with. So much riding on what happens for them over the next few months. Okay, JP, we covered a lot. We hit our original topic. We talked about Stephon Diggs. If people want to check out more of you breaking down the NFL, where can they do that?
You can find me at SB Nation. I cover basically anywhere where football is being played. I'll be there. But specifically, the NFL draft, got a few fun stories coming out this week. And just follow me on Twitter at Acosta32_JP and see what I'm doing.
Tremendous. JP, thank you so much. Perfect guest for the show today. So much valuable insight. Loved having you on. Thanks so much, JP Acosta. Love JP's work. Love having him on the show. Hope you guys enjoyed our breakdown of the Stephon Diggs trade and our conversation about this upcoming draft. We have more audio coming next week, talking more draft stuff. A couple cool ideas in the hopper. Going to get some fun guests on to talk about them. And we will be back next week here on the Bill Barnwell Show.